International Radio.
All right, and welcome, everybody. I'm Stephen Roberts, and this is Stephen Roberts Live on We Roar Radio. So tonight I have two very special guests, along with my co-host, Jillian. Are you there, Jill?
I'm here, Stephen.
Okay.
Waiting with bated breath.
Waiting with bated breath.
Yes.
First, I have the son of Andrew. His name is Kevin. That's all I'm going to say about that. So welcome to the show, Kevin.
Hello. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I also have brought back on his special advocate, Dean Tong. Welcome back to the show, Dean.
Steve and Julia, thanks for having me back. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Let's get into a little bit of your background first, Kevin. I believe you said you wanted to speak first, or maybe Dean wanted you to speak first, and let's get to know Kevin a little bit.
Yeah, okay. So my story begins in 2012. I had a heart attack, and it was discovered I had a rare congenital heart condition. So I had to have open heart surgery. And so it was fine. I had the surgery, but then I started having these serious complications of pericarditis and extreme chest pains. And my doctors wouldn't believe it because these complications are rare. And basically they blamed my mom for it and put me in CPS saying it was her fault. And eventually I got out of CPS within 30 days because they realized I do have actual heart issues. And now my dad is filing for custody and using the ammunition from CPS saying my mom is making me sick as his reason for taking custody. And that's my current situation.
Speak up into your microphone as best as you can, Kevin.
Oh, okay.
I heard that, Kevin. So basically, that's horrible for you. Really, really horrible.
Yeah.
And And I'm wondering if the dismissal, because you were discharged from CPS, what does that discharge note say?
When I was dismissed, it basically said that I can just continue on living with my mom.
Right. So wouldn't that be evidence that your mum's fabulous, you know, that it was trumped
right.
up? I mean, you must have documentary evidence from both the hospital and from the CPS discharge notice that should support your claim to be with your mum. And you have rights to be with your mother anyway, don't you?
Yeah, we have like the papers that released me that says I'm safe at home with my mom.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. But so really, the family law court wouldn't. They're not taking that that evidence very strongly. They're taking it with like a grain of salt.
Can you make them listen to you?
Can I make them listen to me?
Yeah, like, can you just stand up and say, you guys really have to listen to me? This is my life, and this is my very important to me, who I live with, and I'm, you know, old enough to drive a car, and the least you can do is let me live with the parent who I want to live with, and that's my mother, and we shouldn't even be in this stupid court.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking, but they won't let me speak in court.
Why not?
The reason is they think my mom is brainwashing me, and that basically anything I say is not valuable, basically.
Okay, look, I'm sure there's someone else there who's got an idea for you, but the point is everybody seems to be scared of social workers and the like, but they're only labels, you know. There has to be good and bad psychologists and good and bad social workers, and there must be good and bad advocates, and And I remember wondering whether or not you could get an advocate who was a social worker or a psychologist to come to court with you or you know, to approach the court beforehand, making sure that the lawyer submits the documents in time for the court to accept them, saying that you want to be with your mother and your mother is fit to have you, and that, you know?
Yeah.
Actually, Jillian, this is Dean Tong. He actually does. Kevin does have what's called a guardian ad litem, which is an advocate for him by law. But in this case, all the advocates for Kevin or his mother are basically disciples of the system. This is clearly the fox guy in the hen house. Now, I'm not going to say that CPS, as the word you use, trumped up this situation. You know, I'm an expert myself, and I have to be objective. Clearly, they made a mistake, as did the hospitals. The hospitals made multiple mistakes, both preoperatively and postoperatively with Kevin. And clearly, they know that there's a huge liability in this case. I mean, absolutely, numbers are staggering. We're talking 3 or 4 hospitals and clinics. We're talking 25 to 50 physicians. I mean, the numbers are staggering here. Monetary damages, both compensatory and punitive. So they know, and they know that I'm on this case now. I'm watching this case from afar, 3,000 miles away in Florida. But the reality is, I'm watching this case, and I have civil rights attorneys who are watching this case. So it is clearly I've now injected an air of paranoia in this case. Is that going to make them stop incarcerating Kevin's mother? No. Is that going to make them stop believing that this is all in Kevin's head? No. Is that going to make them stop believing that Kevin's mother projected all this onto Kevin? No.
So what I get all of that, but what I'm wondering is, did the mother go to jail at Christmas or whenever she was going?
She has gone to jail twice already, Jillian, and round 3 is coming up this Friday. She's due back in court in less than 48 hours in Washington State for what I'm calling round 3 of this heavyweight fight between the Tacoma Court Commissioner and Kevin Kuhlman's mother, Ann Giroux. And Ann, according to attorneys, is what they call an immovable object. In other words, she's not going to budge. She's not going to purge the contempt that she's in by availing herself of this mental health evaluation. She's not going to put the kids in reunification therapy with their father, because the entire system is jaded on the side of the very system. It's the fox guy in the hen house.
Well, you know, this is just me as a human who doesn't know, you know, enough about this, but it was the same question I had before. Who is supporting her in this?
I am.
Right. So you are looking after her. How?
Well, I have poured over thousands of pages of discovery, have concluded, in my own opinion, that this is not a case of Munchausen syndrome by proxy or what they're now calling it in our DSM-5 pediatric falsification disorder, that she has basically confabulated signs and symptoms and exacerbated those same within Kevin's body. There's just no way that Ann Giroux caused pericarditis, pleural effusions, continuing chest pains, recurrent chest pains, difficulty breathing, shortness of breath, sweating. It's just impossible for Ann Giroux to have caused Seattle Children's Hospital to open this boy's chest up and do a sternotomy and do open heart surgery to repair a coronary artery anomaly. And then after he got out of surgery, he developed an autoimmune condition, supraventricular tachycardia, what's called SVTs. He developed pneumonia. He developed severe pericarditis, which is now termed, if you Google it, it's called incessant pericarditis. In other words, it recurs almost continually every 6 weeks. And if untreated, it can develop into what they call cardiac tamponade, which is basically a flooding of the chest cavity, which if they don't do what's called a pericardiocentesis, which they did on him August of last year, he can die. So the liability here is huge. This kid is only, he's only 17 years old. He does not have the heart of a normal 17-year-old, obviously. He's already gone through a physical and emotional trauma that, most people don't go through in an entire lifetime at the age of 17. And they believe, his mother's behind all this.
Okay. So who's going to court with the mother, or does she rock up on her own?
According to Ann, talking to her yesterday, now because I'm in Florida, it's now past midnight. She is not going to go to court on Friday. She believes Kevin's situation has exacerbated to whereby she'd be leaving her son in an absolute 911 situation if she left his side. So I'm thinking the commissioner is going to issue a capias for her arrest. And send authorities out to get her.
Okay, so what about if we just turn some of this interview now then over to the son, Kevin, who's obviously fighting for something, and get some of this recorded and see, because as radio people, I suppose this is what we can do best for you, is have Kevin's opinion recorded. And out, in the public domain. Would that work for you, Kevin?
Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah. So, Kevin, was your father physically violent with you, or verbally, or emotionally, or physically violent with you?
Yes, when he lived with us. When I was, nine, I was going to take a shower, and he just ran towards me, and he grabbed me by my hood, and then he just lifted me up, choking me. And then he just dropped me.
Right.
So, I mean, my dad has a lot of random, violent acts.
Right.
He has a really short temper.
Right. So that was a... Go on.
Yeah, in addition to that, he did a lot of stuff to my mother, too, and my sisters.
And you saw that?
Yeah. Once I woke up in the middle of the night because I heard my dad yelling at my mom, and then he threw a cell phone at her, and then he went crazy, and then he just ran outside or something. But I was just in my room, and I was really scared to get up. I'd used the bathroom, but I was just really scared
absolutely shitting yourself. And I imagine, I'll come back to this, I'm staying in exactly this area. I imagine, when he grabbed you by your hoodie and lifted you in the air and just about choked you and threw you on the floor, that would have made you feel, how did you feel?
I was in shock. Because it's just what the heck? Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
So now I don't really know what to expect from him. Because one minute he might be talking nice, but then the next he'll be enraged, attacking you.
Yeah. So he's sort of what they call it. I mean, I'm not trying to put a label on him, but it's that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde thing where he just, this rage. Do you want to explain that a little bit more?
Yeah. I think it's that he just has a really short temper.
Yeah.
And I thought that, after all these years, because in CPS I had to live with him, I thought that maybe he would have changed.
Yeah.
But when I lived with him, I can tell that he was being, overly nice. But then just, little things he would get really mad at. Like we were ordering pizza, and I was like, can I have cheese? And he just, snapped at me, no. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
And I know that's nothing, but it's just his, true self is coming out.
Yeah, and the and self that you're scared of. Yeah, go on.
And if I were to live with him, he would just get used to me and then his abuse would just get stronger and stronger.
And that's like an instinct you have, because we can tell when we need to be wary of some people. And but you've got an instinct as well as experience, it seems to me.
Yeah,
so you really, really, if I said to you, righto, you've got to go and live with your father in 5 minutes' time, how would you feel?
I wouldn't live with him.
Right.
It so wouldn't happen.
You just couldn't do it. It's that terrifying. It's that bad. I mean, why wouldn't I'm just getting you to repeat yourself, Kevin. I might be sounding dumb, but you know,
yeah,
some lawyers and people who are listening to this can be very dumb. Why? So just, you know, just tell the court, you know, tell the world why you don't want to live with your father again, and why you want to live with your mother. My dog's snoring. I have to wake him up. Hang on. Go and talk on.
Yeah, go ahead, Kevin. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to stay with my mom because my mom, like, at right now, like, if I were to be with my dad, he wouldn't know how to take care of me. And I'm sure he wouldn't believe me when I have chest pain. Because, like, my kind of chest pain, I don't, like, start crying. And it's more like a silent pain. And my mom, she's been around with me through all of this. And she even knew my pericarditis was coming before I did. And
yeah.
Kevin, didn't your mother have the same genetic disorder?
Wait, can you repeat that?
Doesn't your mother have the same genetic disorder?
Oh, with my heart?
No, with her heart. Your mother.
My congenital heart condition, it has nothing to do with genetics. It is just like a random anomaly that just happened.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay. You know, what it seems to me that you're saying is that your mum's intuitive and that she's tuned into you and she can tell when you're not well when... is that right?
Yeah.
You know, that's part of it, folks. And I might add that during all of Kevin's medical trials and tribulations, the father was never there. Never once did he, you know, join in on the EMS, you know, situation, 911 to the hospitals, where Kevin required acute emergency care, wasn't there at the open heart surgery. Just wasn't around. The guy was non-existent. Yeah. So now, after he's fostered and exacerbated his ex-wife's purported Munchausen syndrome, he wants custody.
Yeah, which is why it's exacerbated. But the thing that I really want to point it out before I forget it is I used to work with intensive care nurses, and they said the doctors, the male doctors, this is 30 years ago, haven't got a clue. We are so tuned into our patients. We know what's wrong with them. And the doctors just haven't got a clue. Because they're just busy out writing scripts and being in their head, but the nurses are just... We know where they are. We know when they're going to get worse. We know when they're going to die. We know when they're going to get better. And the doctors, you know, and this sounds like a very similar sort of dynamic.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Julian, because you're right on, spot on, if you will. That's what's going on in this case. And not just that, but they never referred Ann or her son, Kevin, to an outside expert facility such as the Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland, Ohio, which is one of the top child cardiac anomaly hospital clinics in the world. So, you know, whether Kevin and Ann's insurance could only afford Seattle Children's Hospital or the area hospitals in Washington State, this kid has a rare congenital heart condition. They were treating him like an experiment, if you will, like a guinea pig. They video recorded the entire surgery. They wanted to use his case in a medical peer-reviewed journal article to basically exacerbate and accentuate their standing as one of the up-and-coming facilities in America on child heart conditions. And meanwhile, this kid is basically dying a slow death. Which may be intensifying, yeah.
Are you thinking of taking them on and suing them?
I can't publicly comment on that, but, you know, all I can say is you know, the writing's on the wall.
Yeah, well, the writing is on the wall, and somebody can sue them, obviously. But the point is, Kevin at the moment needs what you'd call acute care, and the acute care is for him to keep his mother. And so I'm wondering if we keep having sort of threatening them, just, you know, like with lawyers and stuff, shouldn't we be threatening them with or offering them a negotiation and a compromise? Like, what about if you were to go to the hospital and say, look, you've just done, you know, $10 million worth of, $15 million worth of damage to these lives. We'll accept, you know, two and keep the mother home, and or five and keep the mother home. Or do you know what I mean? Like, it seems to me people need to realize, if they were to realize a court case is going to happen, and so they may as well close on it or something. But the longer they keep Kevin away from his mother while he's young, he needs her now. That's what I mean by it's acute. Like, if it was me, I'd go to the hospital and say, listen, we've got an enormous case over you, and it's only going to get worse if you take this boy with his sore heart away from his mother. There's nothing wrong with the mother. It's been proven. Here's the evidence. You know, the kid was put back in the kid's hands from child and protection. He doesn't like his father. His father's been violent with him. He says if his father's going to pick him up, he's going to run away. We can add that to the sue, or you can just stop the whole case now and give the kid, oh, they're two separate things, but just tell the court, give the kid to the mother now.
No, I think it's gone too far.
Who's it gone too far for? Like, it's gone too far for Kevin, that people are still fighting and they just haven't got the mother with Kevin.
I'm not alluding to that. I'm alluding to the fact that the cover-ups, the collusion, the conspiracy in this case is so deep, it's so political, because Ann did query all state senators and legislators in the state of Washington for help as well. That's what I'm saying. From the ground up, this case is RICO, racketeering influence of corrupt organization. It's got it smells like it.
The carnage. The problem is Kevin is becoming the carnage, because all the bully boys and everybody's all angry with each other. But who's giving a damn about just today and the sick boy with his mother? Like, I don't even want to do a radio show in a way that's just saying, oh, it's all stuffed. You know, I want to be doing something that's actually protecting Kevin today, not adding him to a list of casualties of people who are being stuffed over by the system, and yet Kevin's sitting here on the same phone call with us, and nobody's actually got a child advocate in there to protect Kevin. And this is really, really annoying.
They believe they do, and this guy now, this is just part of the system protecting itself. And the reality is, the mistakes went so far, so deep, from the medical profession to the child protective services profession, and now to the family court system profession, that everybody's trying to cover each other's tracks. So the entire system is so jaded and so biased and prejudiced against Kevin and his mother that there's no way
What's the purpose of us being on radio if we're not protecting Kevin and his mother? What's the purpose of hearing how it's all stuffed and there's nothing we can do? Like, why are we talking?
We're talking to promote the visibility of this problem, which unfortunately and sadly is not specific to the Giroux family here. This is like metastatic carcinoma, and you'd be surprised how many mothers and their children are affected by this nationally and probably even internationally.
All right, Stephen, you talk for a minute. I'll be back in a sec.
Stephen?
I've seen
real cases of Munchausen, and I've had cases of real cases of Munchausen where mothers have deliberately confabulated signs and symptoms to cause doctors to write prescriptions, to do procedures, to even do unnecessary surgeries, but nothing like this. We're talking like an appendectomy, removal of an appendix or something. How could a mother possibly cause a hospital system to do open heart surgery? on her son. There's no possible way she could be responsible for that. And, you know, so this kid is a medical enigma. Are the best words to coin this case. Kevin is a medical enigma that clearly has gotten the best of all the board-certified cardiologists in the Seattle-Tacoma area. They have never referred this family outside, probably so that no outside experts could find their errors. Again, writing's on the wall. So, you know, what do you do with that? Well, you try to get media attention to promote the awareness and visibility of this case that you know, that is such a cover-up, mistake after mistake after mistake. And then you address it. And, you know, look, you know, when I get involved in cases, I demand accountability. I demand accountability from the child protection system. I demand accountability from the people in the case, whether it's my client or the opposing client. I'm in a case for right, wrong, truth, and justice. You know, I want the truth. I have to have the truth. Whether that requires to get involved and get 25 or 50 experts to impeach the purported experts that think that they knew what they were doing in this case, then that's what I do. You know, but I want the truth and I want justice for this family. And however means I have to do to attain that, I will do so.
Are you still there, Joe?
Sorry about that. Yeah, I just had to run and let somebody in the back door. The thing is, that's fantastic. So what's the name of the court again that this is going to, and the name of the judge that keeps ruling? We need to expose the lawyers.
This is the Pierce, P-I-E-R-C-E, Pierce County Courthouse in Tacoma, Washington, which I guess is around 30 miles from Seattle. The judge, it's actually a commissioner, which is kind of like a lawyer with judge powers. Not really a full-blown judge, but she's a commissioner. Her name is Diana Kiesel, K-I-E-S-E-L.
Do you think it's going to take lawsuits, Dean?
I don't like to comment even on my strategy in a public forum, obviously, legal protective reasons. But the reality is, like I said, I will do what I have to do to get justice for this family and expose the system's errors.
How do we send a copy of this interview to Diana Kiesel? What would her address be?
Well, she might have an email contact. Who knows?
You know, I don't have the exact address, Jillian. Maybe Kevin has that, but I'm in Florida. I'm like 3,000 miles away from where this case is happening.
You're a lot more than 3,000, Dean.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's how long it's been since I've been to the Seattle-Tacoma area.
Okay, well, I would just like to make sure, Stephen, can you and I ring up Diana Kiesel and have her refuse to speak to us?
Not at this hour.
No, but tomorrow or something. Like, I mean, we've got to put pressure on Diana Kiesel and on the Pierce County Courthouse and get their attention and send them a copy of this interview. That's obviously the beginning, and for that, I would like to have Kevin speak a bit more, and Kevin, just pretend you're talking to the judge or something and say what you want, and I'll get Stephen to email this off to them, won't you, Stephen?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Won't we?
Yeah,
Kevin, sure. Just tell them why you don't want to live with your parents and what you're going to do if they try and get you to live
with his father.
And
with his father.
You already have anyway.
Okay.
Just make a plea. Make a plea.
Yeah, I don't want to live with my dad because I'm scared that he's going to hurt me. When I was little, he choked me, and he hurt he attacked my mom, and he yells at us. And now, when I was released from CCS, he told me that I can stay with my mom, and he's not going to file for custody. He's a compulsive liar, and he's not going to believe me if I go over there when I have chest pain, and I'm probably going to die with him. And And I'm really just, it irritates me, and I'm scared if to even, like, be a part of him. And if they actually put my mom in jail on Friday and they try and get me, I'm going to run away. I'm not even going to deal with him.
Good on you. Because somebody who grabs
sorry,
a little kid...
No,
you haven't said enough. I'm serious. Because when somebody grabs a little kid and chokes them at the age of 9, and when a woman leaves her husband, she usually does it for very, very important reasons. And you've got an extreme heart condition. We don't need any more. There's already, you know, the evidence. There's heaps of hospitals and doctors that know all about this. And the least that you can do, Diana Kiesel, who we're sending this to, is make sure this poor kid is heard. And I think he should be taken, the international right to the child, say that he has a right to choose which parent he's at, to be interviewed at age-appropriate ways, for goodness sake, he's quite old enough to be interviewed. This has got nothing to do with some psychologist assessment. He's his own psychologist. He knows he's scared of his father.
Right, yeah. That's very good. Actually, the law upholds Kevin's wishes as the number one criterion of who he should be living with. And you know, he wants to live with his mother. She's the only competent caregiver for him. Dad has been not only a distant dad, but non-existent. And then, of course, when he was around, he does have quite a history of known domestic violence. So basically, the court would be putting this kid and his younger sister. He's got a sister that's 14. In an at-risk, in harm's way, in jeopardy situation.
That's another important thing. And what's your sister's opinion, Kevin?
Yeah, my little sister is even more afraid than me. Like, every time she even, like talks about our dad, she starts crying. She has the same fears as I do. She doesn't want to live with him.
Okay. So you, we need to get a proper advocate that you're all happy with.
And here's the ironic thing, folks. With this being round three of Ann's possible incarceration coming up this Friday, I believe in my heart of hearts that the reason the commissioner scheduled the court hearing for this Friday, December 20th, was to keep Ann incarcerated for the entire weekend.
This is the thing. I want to make this a fairly short interview, and I'd like to do quite a few of them because I want to make sure that this is sent to people who'll actually listen to it. So I think we should just go punch, punch, punch. It's up to Stephen. But
no,
what do you think?
We have an hour and a half left, Jill.
Oh, okay then. All right, well, keep talking about what's wrong with you. With you and your sister, what sort of conversations do you and your little sister have, Kevin, about your father? Like, what sort of conversations take place?
Well, I don't actually talk with my sister about him because I know how much it upsets her. But the little time that we did talk about it, I think I told her that if we do have to live with him, that she doesn't need to listen to him if he tells her to do something that she's afraid to do. Or if she's afraid, she can just run away like I would.
What have you seen? So, in other words, they're setting your children up to become homeless or runaways, and then that's even more dangerous, especially at your ages. And so the judge is actually, or anybody who sends you to live with the father, your children have told them what you're going to do. We've got cases of this already that we've interviewed, haven't we, Stephen?
Yes, many of them.
Yep. And then there's the Sam Grassini one. Both
and
of
many
their
more
kids
coming, too.
Yeah. And it's know, just because...
And I might add that, you know, the father has retained private counsel who's been on this case for quite a while. Dan Cook is his name. And Ann has had to go with the DAC counsel, which is the Department of Assigned Counsel, which, of course, is a pro bono free attorney paid for by the state but court-appointed. And these lawyers, she's already had two since I've been on the case, and I've only been on the case for a month, and they just haven't done a thing for her, absolutely nothing. And, you know, look, I work with lawyers, barristers, solicitors, 24/7, 365, and they come in all shapes and sizes. They're clearly not all created equal. But the reality is you get what you pay for in this legal system, and Ann has pro bono counsel. counsel who clearly is not advocating for her like I am. So basically counsel that's telling her to jump through all the hoops that this commissioner is telling her to do so. And of course, she's not going to do that. So she continues to be in contempt. She will continue to be in contempt through Christmas, into the new year, into 2014.
The thing is, you're right. Judges love paperwork and lawyers love paperwork. So I'm wondering if why the council isn't just... I think I said this last time. It's like it looks like it's just a slam Trump card case. I just don't understand how it keeps losing when the children, the medical reports and Child and Protection Services are all saying that the boy should be, that Kevin, you should be with your mother. What's making it not work, do you reckon, Kevin?
Wait, sorry, can you repeat that? I couldn't hear well.
I'm saying judges love paperwork, right? Because that's right, evidence. Right. Now, yeah, you have the paperwork and the scars and everything, and your mum has it all for your hospital admissions and your operations and your complications. You have the paperwork that says from Child and Protective Services that it's fine for you to live with your mother. So those two pieces of paper, I'm saying, should be enough for you to take. Why aren't they enough, in your opinion, as a 17-year-old? Why do you think that your mum keeps failing in court?
I think she keeps failing.
Remember, this is the same. These are the same hospitals that turned Ann in. So the same hospitals that did surgery on Ann turned her in for alleged Munchausen syndrome by proxy.
Yeah, I've got that. I'm getting. Yeah, you're right. Thanks for saying that, Dean. What do you think, Kevin?
I think it's because the courts are working with CPS and the doctors, and they just don't want they don't want her to win. They don't want me to be with my mom. They want me to be with my dad. And I really don't know why. Because my dad told me in CPS that CPS told him to file for custody. Like, I know these little bits and pieces of facts, but I really don't know why my dad's filing for custody, why this is even happening. Because I know my dad doesn't really care to have me, like, live with him, because, like, for the past 5 years, I haven't even seen him. So why all of a sudden? I don't know.
Okay, I have something I'd like. It is confusing, isn't it? The thing is, your father has only said, CPS said, file for custody. He could make that up. You don't know the circumstances in which CPS said file for custody. He might have gone, why did you give him back to the daughter? Why did you give my family back to the mother? She's horrible. And Child and Family Services would thought, it's none of our business. If you want them, you go and file for custody. You know, there's several reasons that he could be saying that CPS filed for custody, but the fact of the matter is you have the paperwork from CPS saying that your mother is a fit person for you to be living with in your condition. So basically, and they had you living there for a month and they saw, you know, how bad your heart is, and the CPS themselves said send the child back to the mother. So I don't see why that shouldn't just be a winning case. It seems to me as though CPS isn't against you. It's the father and his lawyers are on one side and CPS is actually on your side at the moment. Is that closer to what's happening?
Well, yeah, I know we do have, like, the papers and the evidence that should blow everything away, but the courts just don't listen to reason and they don't listen to the evidence. And it's frustrating because there's nothing you can do.
Kevin, Jill.
That I can think of.
Jill, the bigger conspiracy is, here, Jill, what Dean alluded to, and this conspiracy is many of the CPS workers and judges, attorneys on both sides, including the Ann's attorney, are all getting paid by the system, and the more they can milk out of somebody on both sides, it doesn't matter who they milk out of, they get that money. And even if Ann does go to jail, they are still going to get money from the private jailing systems because their pensions are tied right into it.
So they're
That's a good point, Steve. I might also add that the last time Ann did go to jail, which was last week, the bailiff who took her into custody and put her in handcuffs hurt her wrist so bad that she had to go to an area hospital for treatment. And I saw the bruises, and they were something to behold. So we also have a case now of police jail brutality in this case.
Yes.
No, it's all getting very messy. The thing is, you have to... Well, you need an advocate that isn't a... what are those Latin people called again? The people who are appointed by the court are something Latin.
Yeah.
I just really think somebody, and maybe you, Kevin, need to search for an advocate for you.
We're going to
from
echo
Children's
out of you,
Rights
Jill.
Commission. Because both of your children are scared of your father, and I just don't see the sense in you going to your father. You're both saying you'll run away, and I think you need to use Children's Rights. And I don't know what Children's Rights are in America. I'm always still trying to find them out. I know that you've signed the International Right to the Child thing, but you haven't ratified it. But even under human rights, you must have a lot of rights that are higher. You're just talking about the little family court. This is beyond the little family court, because the little family court are mucking it up. So you can go to people higher and above them with more powers, and I'd be using human rights to do it.
Well, that's exactly we need a guy like that.
Jill, we're getting an echo from you.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
We need a guy like Nelson Mandela to step up here. It's not just what you know, it's who you know, to make calls to Diana Kiesel, to the attorneys, and say, look, enough is enough of the abuse perpetrated on this family by the very system charged to protect it. And that's it. I'm not going to take any more. And, you're going to kill this kid. So that's what we need. Right now I'm trying to get enough publicity and do enough for this family to see if I can raise donations to get me in a retained private attorney. Someone who will actually be an aggressive litigator, not somebody who will acquiesce to the whims of the system. That's hard enough for me to do right now, because everybody's in on this in Washington State. Nobody wants to touch this case with a 10-foot pole.
Yes, that's what it sounds like anyways. But like I said, the bigger conspiracy is they're all getting kickbacks. They're all getting paid by the system. And until they earn a honest wage and work for the people, this type of system is going to be just abused by greedy people. Maybe you could talk a little bit, Dean, about your experiences with the system itself.
Well, it's a very contested system, and this was obviously a high conflict, protracted parenting time custody case way back when. The father has, like I said, a known history of domestic violence. The mother is unemployed. Father makes good money. Father has the influential connections within the system to spiral this thing out of control against his own flesh and blood, his kids, and his ex-wife, the children's mother. That's exactly what he's doing. So he's part of this. He's clearly part of this. racketeering process that's going on. And, you know, I find this a lot. I mean, I just came out of court a few days ago here in the case in Florida that I'm on, you know, where it's possible a judge is on the take in that case, a judge who actually commented to the Orlando Sentinel a dozen years ago in 2001 that a little pedophilia wouldn't hurt anybody. I'm not making this up. And this judge believed my client, who's the mother, falsely accused the father of incest. And, you know, so, but the same judge has been seen in topless bars in the area of Florida that he's in with women, cheating on his wife and getting sexual favors that his wife was not performing for him. So, you know, this is what you're dealing with. The politics is so thick in these cases. You can, you know, you can cut it with a knife. It's unbelievable. So it's not just knowing the law and psychology and medicine and science. You got to deal with the political minutia in these cases.
Yes, you do. I just heard about that case that you're referring to, the judge. And also, I can actually, there's one I spoke of the other night. I found of a case of a Philadelphia judge that is going to jail for 28 years for actually selling kids to the juvenile court system over there in Pennsylvania somewhere, I believe. Do you know about that case, Dean?
I haven't heard about that one, Stephen.
Okay.
Well, this one isn't for sale. He's got to work hard. So, right, Kevin? It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's just absolutely ridiculous. Kevin, are there people who you trust and who you can contact in your community who will support you?
I know people support me, like my friends are like, yeah, I support you, but there's not a lot of people, things that people can do, just because like. Who they are, I mean.
Okay.
Like, I have friends at, like,
yeah,
adults,
go on,
like at our church, like adults at our church who are, like there for me, like, emotionally and stuff, and, like, supporting me, and, like, wishing that things would go well, but I don't know anyone that can, like, physically do something to end this court stuff that's going on.
Have any of your friends thought about getting up protests or anything like that?
Well, I raised that possibility outside the courthouse because, of course, you know, we do have a First Amendment right to freedom of the press and freedom of speech. But, again, the case is so politicized and political that everybody's talking the talk on the Internet, but nobody's walking the walk when I try to set something up. And ask for people to show up at the courthouse to protest with signs, even signs they make up themselves off their computer. They don't have to be professionally made signs. People just don't want to get involved. And I know it's not a good time of year to do this, being around the holidays. But I mean, I think this just pours gasoline on the fire because this case is going on around the major holidays.
Well. Sometimes they do pour gasoline on fires to fight fires. If you get out west there, I don't know. Maybe it's just my lack of experience with these type of cases. I guess maybe both Jillian and I are lack of experience. It just sounds exasperating to me, and I think Jillian also.
Well, I don't know. I think I've gone dead again, but if I haven't...
No, you're on.
Oh, okay. Then the Pierce County Courthouse and the Commissioner, Diane Kiesel, I'm wondering if we can find a way that they are prepared to put some time aside to listen to Kevin and his sister's wishes. I want, you know, in negotiations, both people have to feel as though they're coming out without too much egg on their face. So I was wondering if a meeting could be arranged for Kevin with the judges and other people, and where the kids can express their wishes, and the people are prepared to, you know, they can give the judges and the courts the opportunity to maintain a little bit of grace, because other, like you were saying, if we just keep pouring fuel on the fire, we're going to end up with a bloody inferno, and the kids are the ones, and the mother and the father are all going to get burnt.
Well, you know, mother and children already have been burnt, and call me what you want. Call me Steven Seagal, call me Jean-Claude Van Damme. I'm coming in here, I guess, to set the record straight, but my track record precedes itself. I usually prevail in cases. Sometimes it's a marathon and not a sprint, but I usually do get my clients' equity at law in court, and I have every intention of doing so in this case.
Okay, so you're pretty sure you're going to get some equity out of this, and yes, they are already burnt, but how much more burnt are they going to get this week?
Well, Kevin's a 911 situation, medically speaking. His signs, his symptoms, his condition is real. It's not fake. It's not caused by his mother. You know, it's real. It's rare, but it's real. And so, you know, it's sad to say, but I don't know how long this boy has on the face of this earth. Even if the system left him alone, I don't know how long he has, because his condition is so chronic. This pericarditis comes up with him. It flares up like every 6 weeks, and when it does, like I said, it can get so bad, it requires a life flight situation to the hospital. You know, you know, look, I work in the law all the time, and lawyers and judges, just like doctors, don't like to admit mistakes. I get that. But you know what? You made mistakes in this case. One system made mistakes that fed into another system that made mistakes that fed into another system that's made mistakes. That's what this case has been. One continuous mistake. No one's going to say, I'm sorry. No one's going to admit culpability. I get that. But, you know, I'm not going to stop doing what I have to do to get from point A to point Z.
What is point B that you're aiming for, Dean?
I can't say, because you know I'm not going to comment on my strategy or where this case is going to get the equity at law I'm seeking for this family. You know, and it's not just this family. I mean, this is a surreal case in Washington State and for this family. But like I said, there are other cases out there, perhaps not this egregious, but there are other cases out there, and there will be future cases out there as well. This is a child abuse industry. It's an industry. It's an establishment. It's out of control. It's an epidemic. It's metastatic carcinoma, and it's a train wreck out of control. I've been involved for 30 years, since 1984. If you asked me 30 years ago if I could make a living at what I'm doing, if I've had almost 1 million hits on my website, abuseexcuse.com, if you asked me that in 1984, I would say you're delusional. Absolutely delusional. And here it is, you know, and I'm living proof of what this system really is. This is not a child protection system. This is disgusting. That's what this is.
Yeah, but you still, I'm talking about in terms of you're representing the family, not you representing winning this case, but I'm talking about what is your aim in, so it seems to me as though, I still don't quite get what your aim is.
Well, the aim was obviously to get Kevin's medical health, you know, fixed, repaired. For all I know, and I'm not a doctor, this kid has got to go back to surgery again. He's got to go back to the operating room again to fix the mistakes made by the Erie hospitals in Seattle, Washington. And so I want his medical records critiqued by outside experts. whether those outside experts are in Ohio or Boston or the UK. I want those records critiqued. I want them looked over by board certified experts, the top cardiologists and cardiac surgeons in the world. So that's the number one thing, is to get this child his health back, because he's only 17. He's got potentially, 75 years to live or whatever on the face of this earth. Almost to the year 2100 or whatever. The mother's health is deteriorated. Anne's health, obviously. One can only imagine the physical, mental anguish she has suffered going through this. She's developed her own medical conditions because of what she's gone through. I have no clue what the younger sister has developed, and I can only imagine the mental anguish she's gone through. Anne has an older daughter who's 22, and while she's been an outside spectator, she too has undergone pain and suffering. Anne's mother, the maternal grandmother in this case, is another outside spectator, but was involved in Kevin's care back in 2009-2010 when Dad was nowhere around. And that person is an RN. She's a registered nurse, Anne's mother. So she has become alienated from the family, not because she hates her daughter or her grandchildren, but because she's so humiliated and embarrassed by what her family has had to go through, and that the very system that she thought was going to help her family did not do so. So the pain and suffering that this family has endured is just unfathomable, unconscionable.
It is. And this is why, I wanted to stop today, of course. Diana Kiesel, I'm just looking at her on the Superior Court commissioners here, and yes, she says she's the presiding commissioner for 2013. I wonder if she's the presiding commissioner for 2014 as well.
I don't know, Jillian, how that works. I imagine that is a elected official position, just like most judges. There are very few states in this country where judges are appointed by courts. Massachusetts, the judges are appointed. But I know in my state of Florida, judges are elected officials. So, like you said earlier, the system doesn't want egg on its face. That's exactly what I intend to give it until they finally recognize their mistakes and back off. Anne's not in contempt of court for anything she's done wrong. The judge held her in contempt of court, civil contempt, because Anne wouldn't listen to her orders. Anne hasn't committed any crime, yet she's going to be incarcerated for the third time this Friday in an institution that's housed by murderers, rapists, and inmates who have committed crimes. And probably will be hurt again, like she was last week, by a jailer, because she's not of total American heritage. She has Japanese heritage in her. So, the bias and the prejudice runs so deep in this case. You can't even fathom that. To get somebody objective to come in as an attorney, who's licensed to practice law in Washington, maybe that person is a lawyer who's in Utah or Idaho or Oregon or California or even British Columbia, Canada, one of the neighboring geographical areas to Washington, then that's what I'm looking for. Someone who has no axe to grind. Someone who's coming in who's objective.
I just want you to find a child advocate for Kevin. I remember asking you this this is just me as a human being approaching another human being saying, can you get Kevin an advocate? And before you answer that, I'm going to tell people, I now have Commissioner Diane, D-I-A-N-A, Diana L. Kiesel, K-I-E-S-E-L, phone number, phone 798-6697. That's 798-6697. And Commissioner Diana L. Kiesel's email address, so you might like to write this down or take this off the recording, anybody who wants to, and particularly you, Dean, and send her a letter explaining your situation to her.
Because obviously you'll do a better job of it than your lawyers will do, and keep a photocopy of the email you sent her, or you know, won't need to, but just, I was going to say the letter, is dkiesel@co.pierce.wa.usa. So there's the contact numbers for this commissioner, and I don't know how she's ruled in the past, but maybe if she understands the facts and she realises it's not a case of Munchausen's by proxy, but it's actually a situation for a young boy and a young girl, then she's in a position to be one of the first judges who ruled with fairness and justice in this case. Dean, go on.
I just don't see it happening because she's already held Anne in contempt two times. Clearly she had memorialized...
Well, could she have folded the lawyer? The lawyer may not have presented the information to her that she...
I've already stated that on this show. The lawyer's not helping Anne. She's not going to do so. The only reason the lawyer's talking to me is Anne has commanded her to do so. Anne waived attorney-client privilege, so the lawyer's talking to me by phone, by email, but the lawyer's not worth 2 cents. She's clearly not worth 2 cents. But the point here is that Anne is not going to avail herself to a mental health evaluation, one that's going to be subjective and that's going to suffer from what we call in psychology confirmatory bias and have a preconceived notion she's already a Munchausen mom. That's why this commissioner has ordered Anne to go through this mental health evaluation.
Let me finish.
To confirm and corroborate that Anne is a Munchausen mom. Okay, that's why the judge has done that. The commissioner wants the kids in with a cherry-picked, subjective mental health counselor that would basically promote reunification therapy of these kids with the father. The same kids who don't want to go see this father. So
I hear what you say, and I know you're an expert.
You're not going to get this judge to change her tune. She's not going to change her tune. Her orders are set stone.
Jill.
You cannot speak like that and have an open mind. But you cannot say a person, this is set in stone and a person won't change their mind.
I do court for a living. Her orders are absolutely set in stone.
The corruption goes high.
Let's go in the middle here. Let's just tease this out a little bit.
How about let's just take a break, Jill? We've done an hour.
Okay, well, just a second, Stephen, and then what I want to tease out, and you can come back and rebut me, all right, or whatever words you want to use for it, explain to me why I'm an idiot, but perhaps the lawyers have not presented the facts to the judge enough for the judge to see that the mother has been acquitted of the accusation of Munchausen's, point one, and point two, surely there's one healthy psychologist there who this woman can ask the courts, I want to choose my psychologist, and that's what she should be arguing for, is to choose a psychologist that she trusts.
With all due respect, I've already been there, done that. Every idea you're coming up with, I've already broached every single idea and then some.
But have you done them? Have you done them? Have you approached the court and asked them, can we have our own psychologist?
It's not going to happen. It is not going to happen.
Well,
it's not. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen with an attorney that's appointed by this commissioner, and this commissioner is still on this case. It will not happen.
Okay. Well, I'd still demand it. I mean,
what does the commissioner do, Dean? Dean, let's take a break, Jill.
The only way to get a legal remedy for Anne Giroux and her family is to get this case before an objective court, another court, a different court. That's part of my goal. I'm not going to say anything further than that, but that's part of my agenda in this case.
Okay, and we're taking a break right now.
All right, thanks.
And listen, I've got to get going because I've got another radio show to do because it's already 1 o'clock here in Florida. But I've got another show to do with a station at 6 a.m. So I've got to get a little sleep. I apologize, but if you could stay on with Kevin, I would appreciate that.
All right, and welcome back, everybody. We're back from the break. We've lost Dean Tong, He's got to get up early. He's got another show. I think he said very, very early, 6 a.m. or something like that. Or maybe he's getting up at 6 a.m. But anyways, we still have Kevin on for a few minutes, and Jill here too. Do you have a last question then, Jill?
Well, I'm hoping I didn't upset Dean Tong and ruin your show for you and have him run off in a flurry, Stephen.
Oh, Dean's a big boy. He can take care of himself.
That's what I reckon. But, you know, sometimes women are more powerful than men, but a woman's criticism men can take far more strongly than a man's criticism.
But do you have a last question, though?
Yeah, well, I want to know what is being done for Dean on a practical level here and now.
Not Dean, Kevin.
Kevin, yeah. And I'm still thinking, you know, as I said before, that Kevin is going to have to, and his mum, are going to have to realise you can't not realise. Try and be brave enough to face the family court in a way in which they can win and not believe that it's all set in stone, as Dean said. I don't think it's all set in stone. I think there is a way to win. And anyway, not only that, people can melt stone. Stone can be melted. I saw that in New Scientist the other day.
Stone can be chipped away, too. So tell us, Kevin, take a minute or so, a couple minutes, whatever you like, and speak what's on your mind. Just close this out. We're going to lose Kevin. He's getting up in the morning for school. It's getting late for him. So speak to your father. Speak to the judge. Speak to the commissioner. Speak to your sisters. Speak to your mother. Speak to your friends.
Write it, Kevin. Put it all in writing and send it off. Now, Kevin, have you got the judge's email?
He's going to go now, Jill, so let him speak.
I'm sorry you're so sick.
No, I have written a letter to the judge basically saying what I want, and they just sent it back to us because they don't want to even have anything to do with me.
Did it come back unopened?
Yeah.
All right, well, then you need a human rights lawyer, and you'll find one who'll work for free, I'll bet you. You need a human rights lawyer because they have powers above the local courts. You need a human rights lawyer and a children's rights lawyer, and I will try and find them for you, and Stephen will contact you with the contacts because you need somebody above this little old pissy commissioner.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, yeah, that's my promise to you. We'll find you human rights lawyers.
So
yeah, I gotta get going though. My pain is starting to increase.
Okay.
Go ahead and take that minute and say something then.
Okay. I just hope that someone, you know, hears this, just this my story, and just kind of, you know, maybe help, like, find a lawyer or an advocate, like you were saying, someone to help me, because I've been trying in our whole entire state. No one will help us. And that's really, I'm just trapped in Washington with with just mean people doing mean things to me, basically.
Okay. Well, I'm going to write it. Yeah, go on.
That's all I have to say. I mean, I can talk about, I mean, we all can talk about this all night. We'd just be going in circles, though, because there's not a lot that can be done by just talking. I just need someone with power to help me, to go into the court and say, I don't need to live with my dad because I don't want to, because he scares me. It's not in my best interest. And then from there, I can get on with my life and start recovering from my heart surgery and my complications. Because that's really what I want. I just want to go on with my life, knowing that I do have these heart issues, but I just want to focus on getting stronger and getting healthier.
All right, I'm just sitting that down. I've just said you don't want to live with your father because he scares me, and I want to go on with my life because of these heart issues and focus on getting stronger, and that's what I really want. I'm going to send an email to Judge Keaton with, you know, today. And I'll find you a human rights representative.
Okay. Thank you, Joe.
Okay. And good luck, darling. Sweet dreams.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks, Kevin. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you, Stephen.
Yes. You're welcome. So, Jill, I'm exhausted here. This is my third show today.
Oh, wow. You're a busy boy.
Yeah, I still have 42 minutes left to go in this show, so I'm going to put a previously run pod on and work on this.
Okay, that's a good idea.
I'm going to work on this show here, so.
Okay, well, I got a bit heated in this show, but I really hate to see that.
Yes, you did. A bit heated?
I've got balls too. I'm not called Trebilcock for nothing. I've got lots of balls, you know.
I thought you was going to try to reach through the computer and grab him by the neck.
Look, I just, you know, I just don't want the collateral damage to be overlooked. You know, I can't. This is the point. This is what the human rights are. It's not about fighting for everybody's human rights. Yes, that's a great thing, and that's what Dean seems to be focusing on. What he said he was focusing on. But I want someone on the ground right now working for Kevin and his mum.
Yes,
now.
I do too.
Yeah, so you got me. Thanks for putting up with me, Stephen.
Oh, that's okay. So I'm going to sign off a little bit early here, everyone, just because I won't be able to sign off for a little bit later. I'm going to throw this pod on. So good night, Jill. Good night, everybody on MSI Radio. I was actually streaming this on both MSI and We Roar, so.
Well, we roared, Kevin. We roared, Stephen. We roared.
Yes, you did.
I did.
So
may I continue to roar.
All right, Jill. So good night.
Good night, Stephen.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone. And look after Kevin.